You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Homelessness in the United States hit an all-time high last year, and California understands this reality more than any state in the country. Of the estimated 650,000 people experiencing homelessness on any given night in the United States, 180,000 are in California. Our state accounts for nearly half of all unsheltered residents in the country. California has invested an unprecedented amount of funding in recent years to address the complex, deep-rooted causes of homelessness. But one tool in particular has been controversial, and that's enforcement. Since 2018, California and western states have been in this murky area when it comes to removing people on public property. A Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling, known as Martin versus Boise, essentially ruled that clearing unhoused residents without adequate shelter space to offer amounts to cruel and unusual punishment, which is a violation of the Eighth Amendment. Since then, public and elected officials across party lines have growingly asked for more legal clarity, and they're finally about to get it. The Supreme Court just heard a case that is challenging that 2018 ruling, and it is considered the most important case about homelessness in decades, Johnson versus Grants Pass. We're going to better understand the legal arguments as well as how this could impact California cities and counties. First, we'd like to welcome Leslie Gilo Jacobs, an Anthony Kennedy professor at McGeorge School of Law, who also served as a law clerk to the late Supreme Court Justice Louis F.J. Powell, Jr. Welcome back, Professor Jacobs.
Thank you for having me.
So Martin versus Boise has been brought up a lot in the debate surrounding homelessness. On the surface, it seems simple. Someone has a right to sleep outside if there's nowhere else to go, and removing them is cruel and unusual punishment. But what the Supreme Court is deciding is more nuanced. Can you unpack that?
Sure. Well, and we're talking about whether the Supreme Court justices are going to interpret a right into the Constitution, not whether homelessness is a big policy problem. Everybody agrees with that. But do we have five justices on the court who are going to do that? And so what we have going on here is the cruel and unusual punishment clause. So we also have to look at the part of a constitution we're talking about. And this was written initially thinking about the sentences, and they couldn't be cruel and unusual. In other words, they were the punishments. But we do have a case that the Supreme Court decided many decades ago saying that California couldn't declare the status of being a drug addict to be a crime. And so that's what's at issue here in the first place, is whether what the city of Grants Pass is doing here is effectively declaring homelessness to be a crime and declaring a status to be a crime, and that the Constitution should forbid that.
Hmm. Given that oral arguments took place yesterday and you listened to them, what struck you about how the attorneys on both sides argued their positions?
Well, it's not surprising how the attorneys argue the position. That is, the prime question is whether this city is actually criminalizing homelessness or whether it's criminalizing conduct, because that is how you, when you read the ordinance, it is a bunch of different types of conduct. But the argument of the advocates is that these are all the conducts that behaviors that homeless people need to engage in. So certainly we saw a focus in the argument on that. But we also saw a focus in the argument on whether it is appropriate for the judges to find a constitutional right here that will limit the discretion of states and cities to deal with a big public problem. And so any time that the court interprets there to be an individual right, it limits the scope of democracy. That's just how it works. And so the question here is, should the court do that? And do we have five justices who are inclined to do that?
We do have a conservative-leaning court, of course. How did the justices respond?
Well, I would say that there certainly seemed to be a divide out there. Our 6-3 divide was in evidence with the three Democratic-appointed justices making the point that it looked like, indeed, the status of homelessness was being criminalized here, and the making points about the unfairness of that, and at least a couple of them inclined to find that there is a right. But then I do think that we see the other justices, Republican appointed justices, not inclined to do so. I think the question is not whether they're going to reverse the Ninth Circuit decision. I think the question is how broad or how narrow they're going to be in doing that.
Given that a decision is expected sometime in June, in just a few months, I mean, you just touched upon this right now. It's not as simple as reversing an appellate decision or keeping the appellate decision, which means there's a lot of options in how this could go. I mean, we don't have the decision yet, but after what you listened to yesterday during oral arguments, how do you think this ruling could go?
Well, as I said, it could be broad or narrow. Frankly, what could be at stake, I don't think the justices will go that way in this case, but really the way of interpreting the cruel and unusual punishment clause could be at stake. That is, Justice Kennedy was the fifth vote, along with more liberal justices, to adopt an evolving standard of decency way of looking at what cruel and unusual punishment means. And so he, with the other justices, held it to be cruel and unusual punishment, several things having to do with capital punishment for juveniles and for people with mental disabilities, and then several other things as well. And so a number of the Republican appointed justices don't like that standard and would simply look back at history and say, well, you know, back in the 1700s, what was cruel and unusual punishment? And that's all it is. That would be a very broad ruling because it would affect more than homelessness. It would affect capital punishment and other sorts of punishments. But we could have more narrow rulings. That is the ruling that says that you can't, the cruel and unusual punishment says you can't criminalize a status. Maybe there are five justices who want to overrule that and say, no, you know, cruel and unusual punishment only applies to the sentences, not to the definition of the crime. And that's in fact what the city of Grants Pass argued. But then there are more narrow grounds. That is, what is the definition of involuntarily homeless? The Ninth Circuit adopted a ratio approach. If you don't have enough beds for your number of homeless people, then you can't enforce these regulations. So maybe they will adopt that more narrow rule of saying, look, we have to look more carefully or require an individualized determination of whether people are involuntarily homeless, as opposed to a big, broad order that affects what the whole city and actually has been held to affect the whole circuit.
And this isn't the first time that this debate has been had. I mean, it's the first time it's reaching the Supreme Court. Given that the Supreme Court receives hundreds, if not thousands, of cases a year to choose from, and you've been a law clerk under a justice, why do you think the Supreme Court chose now to hear a challenge to a 2018 appellate court ruling?
Well, the 2018 appellate court ruling they didn't take. And then this is a new ruling. This is the one in Grants Pass. And so they had the first opportunity, should we take it, and didn't, because I do think it's a tough question. But then this is, they're being petitioned also, interestingly, as we know, by Democratic governors and mayors who are saying the decision there, while we may well support the right of homeless people and house people to, in fact, not be criminalized if there really is no other option, the way that the courts have been interpreting it has just taken away local discretion so much that they can't serve the public and enforce public health measures and public property measures. So there was much more of an outcry across the board to take the case. And so they did. And certainly when the court takes a case, it's four votes to take it, five to get to a ruling. But I would say that we probably have four votes to modify what the Ninth Circuit said. Five votes, but four to grant it. And that's significant. There was no circuit split. It's just meaning we didn't have courts going different ways. You just had this one ruling that was causing confusion and difficulties, according to political leaders.
So if that modification happens come June and it actually favors Grants Pass, for example, I mean, what we're talking about now is the Eighth Amendment, which is cruel and unusual punishment. But are there other constitutional arguments that homelessness advocates could argue for in court?
I think there are. That is, the cruel and unusual punishment clause, it is, I mean, again, there is a status case, but it's somewhat of a tough fit. And it's especially a tough fit given the predilections of the majority of the court who don't want to expand this particular right. But for example, you know, there is arguments here about the city aiming to get the homeless people out of the city and foist that problem onto other cities and states. And that's something that these justices might be more sympathetic to. That is, if there's a purpose to export a problem that people should share, that could be a problem. Also, if in fact you have something like a rule about not using blankets, but then it's enforced unequally. That is, people who are homeless have enforcement, but you know, a business person just has a little blanket or and sleeps on a bench, that could be something that the justices also would say, you know, you have a pattern here of enforcement that is not even, and so it's not equal. So maybe there are other opportunities to make the argument, if not within this clause of the Constitution.
Professor Jacobs, as always, thank you for the time and the analysis.
Thank you for having me.
Leslie Gilo Jacobs is an Anthony Kennedy professor at McGeorge School of Law, who also served as a law clerk to late Supreme Court Justice Louis F.J. Powell, Jr. And just a note, McGeorge School of Law is a financial supporter of CAP Radio. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're unpacking yesterday's Supreme Court case about homeless enforcement when people are sleeping outside. A ruling is not expected until June, but the case could have wide-ranging implications, especially for California. I now want to bring in Marisa Kendall, a homelessness reporter for our content sharing partners at CalMatters. Welcome back, Marisa.
Thanks so much.
So you've been covering this case leading up to yesterday's oral arguments, and we're talking about a case from a small city in southern Oregon. It's about a five-hour drive north from Sacramento. Why is this reverberating across urban metro areas like the Bay Area, Los Angeles, and even here in Sacramento?
Yeah, I mean, arguably, there's nowhere where this is going to be felt more acutely than in California, because we have such a large homeless population, and particularly in our large cities. And in those cities that you mentioned, they have felt the ramifications of the precedent that we've just been talking about. There's been several lawsuits in multiple cities where the district courts have prevented cities or delayed them from clearing encampments, citing some of the prior legal precedent.
How closely is California watching this? I mean, we're talking about what took place at the Supreme Court, but obviously conversations and debates have been pretty robust in the months leading up to the Supreme Court case.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue, you know, all eyes are on this case, and you can see it in the briefs that have been filed. Everyone from Governor Newsom to the city of Los Angeles to the city of San Francisco have filed briefs in the case, just weighing in and expressing their opinion and urging the justices to go a certain way.
What does Governor Newsom have to say?
His brief was interesting. He was trying to walk a really fine line. He did not side with either party. The last thing that he and other liberal leaders in California want to do is be seen as, quote unquote, criminalizing homelessness. So he took a middle ground approach. He said, you know, we do not support what Grants Pass did. That was wrong to prohibit camping everywhere throughout an entire city, even though you have no shelter. That is wrong. But he also wants cities to have more leeway to punish people for camping.
It seemed interesting to me in the years since Martin versus Boise in that, you know, increasingly over the years, which is could be a rarity in California, you have public and elected officials being vocal about this case, wanting that legal clarity, which is an agreement in one way across party lines. And then, of course, they differ in the details.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that might be partly just a factor of how much, you know, how much more prevalent homeless encampments are now. We are seeing, you know, larger camps becoming more entrenched, and just a lot more pushback against that. So these elected officials are just under a lot of pressure to do something about these camps.
What stands out to you about the city's arguments in California as to why they should be allowed more freedom to enforce anti-camping ordinances?
Yeah, they say, you know, the courts have really tied their hands and prevented them from, Gavin Newsom said, you know, quote unquote, common sense, enforcing common sense ordinances. And they'll argue that these ordinances are needed to protect not only the housed residents, but also unhoused residents. And they make the case, you know, these encampments are unsafe and unsanitary. And using these ordinances, it's another tool to help try to get people into shelter. You know, advocates will push back on that and say, you know, sweeps don't necessarily lead to housing and shelter. So there's a little bit of a pushback there.
Yeah, if you can unpack more what advocates for the rights of unhoused people, what they're arguing for, and also what they're concerned about if there are modifications following the Supreme Court decision.
Yeah, so, advocates, unhoused folks I've talked to, and experts, in the medical field, mental health field, I'll say homeless sweeps have really negative consequences for the residents in these encampments. People lose their possessions, they lose, treasured items, they lose medication, medical supplies, they lose things like tarps and blankets that protect them from the elements. So that impacts their physical health. It's traumatic to be constantly having to move and have your things lost. That impacts their mental health. And it also pushes them farther away from the services they rely on. And that's everything from bathrooms and showers to food to outreach workers who help them find housing. So there really are, human costs to these sweeps. And of course, it doesn't end someone's homelessness when you kick them out of their encampment. These are not providing more housing.
And underscoring how complicated this problem is, I mean, when you talk about the human costs of encampments, I would think that businesses, local businesses and neighborhoods would argue that they shoulder a human cost as well, that it impacts their businesses if you have people sleeping outside. How do you understand what, neighborhoods and business communities are advocating for and how they feel, that they're shouldering a large brunt of this crisis?
Absolutely. And that is a real concern. You see that in cities all throughout the state where there are large encampments in front of businesses. Sometimes people stop going to those businesses. There's issues of trash and waste, disturbances. The California Chamber of Commerce weighed in with a brief in this case and said, businesses cannot hire or retain employees when encampments pop up near their stores and they lose customers, which, has a real fiscal impact on businesses.
To be clear, and please correct me, I mean, how I understand this case is this case doesn't really address the root causes of homelessness, but more the visibility of homelessness.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't address housing. It doesn't address prevention of homelessness, services, anything like that. It really just addresses how cities manage existing encampments, which, has become extremely important as we start to realize we just don't have enough shelter beds. We don't have enough housing. So we're going to have encampments for the foreseeable future. So, cities are trying to take extra steps to regulate them, to try to legislate, where they can and cannot be. And in some cases also to try to make life a little more bearable by providing some services to those residents.
Finally, as we wait for that June decision from the Supreme Court, before we let you go, there was another big development here in the state, and it came down to homelessness resources funding in California. As I mentioned early on, California has invested an unprecedented amount of funding in recent years, I believe upwards of $20 billion to this crisis. And state auditors took a hard look at how that money was spent and if it was tracked. What did they find from that audit?
Yeah, that a lot of people were waiting for that audit, and then it came out and they determined we don't really know where that money went, what it was spent on, how much was spent, and if it worked. They analyzed 5 statewide programs, and 3 of those state programs, including the one that provides, the majority of homelessness funding to cities and counties, they said there's just not enough data here for us to even determine whether these programs are working or not. So that created, a lot of anger from people who, want more accountability here.
Was this the first audit of this kind?
Yeah, this was pretty unprecedented in its approach. There was an earlier audit by the California Interagency Council on Homelessness. They were tasked by the legislature with tracking state homelessness spending and determining what was working, but they only did it once, and they have not analyzed any spending since 2021, which is part of the problem here.
Okay, so following this audit, I mean, hopefully it doesn't just exist in a PDF. What does the state, both the governor and lawmakers, cities and counties, what do they do with these findings?
Yeah, so the audit came with some suggestions of ways that the state and the two cities that it audited, San Jose and San Diego, can better track results, which it hopes they implement by September. The audit by itself doesn't have any teeth, but legislators are saying they want to pass some bills that would provide more accountability. And we actually just saw a new bill introduced, AB 2903, which would require agencies involved with homelessness to report more data annually to the state.
And although audits, the state audit doesn't have teeth per se, I mean, state lawmakers have to approve the funding for an audit to take place, correct?
Yes. Yeah. This was introduced by two lawmakers, and then it was the funds for it were approved by the state audit committee last year. And then we finally got the results not too long ago.
And I think that illustrates the political will that there is, because both of those co-authors, weren't they across party lines? Wasn't it a Democrat and a Republican?
It was, yeah. And I think that does illustrate just how much appetite there is for more accountability here. I think legislators and, you know, voters across the board, they see how much money the state is pouring into the homelessness crisis. And then on the street, they don't see any improvement. And I think that's, you know, making them want to demand answers, like, where is this money going?
Yeah, and we don't have a good answer right now, according to that audit. What has Governor Newsom said about this audit following the findings?
He redirected questions to the Interagency Council on Homelessness, and they put out a statement, you know, basically saying, you know, we're continuing to, you know, try to track this. They tried to sort of point a finger at cities, and they said, you know, cities are the ones implementing these programs, so they're responsible for providing the data to us, you know, look at them. They also said, we don't, you know, you gave us funding to do one audit. We don't have funds to continue to analyze these programs.
I go back to the disconnect that you illustrated and laid out, that there's been unprecedented funding, but people don't feel a difference in their daily lives. Do you think that played a role during the primary, Prop 1? You know, it narrowly passed. It was just a sliver of a margin, and it was neck and neck. Do you think that was one way for voters to express their views on how they think the state is responding to homelessness effectively?
Yeah, I think you might be right. I think voters, you know, there might just be some fatigue with spending here and not seeing results. And, you know, it's possible that vote might have turned out differently if this audit had come out before ballots were cast.
Marisa, as always, thank you.
You're welcome.
Marisa Kendall is a homelessness reporter for our content sharing partners at CalMatters. Still ahead, an ongoing exhibit at the Sacramento History Museum looks at the history of tattooed women throughout California. It's called Tattooed and Tenacious. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.